All right, Kim Gordon. Thanks very much, Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Wednesday edition. As I said with Bill and Wendy a little bit later in the program, we're going to go out on the ice and talk with Nate Herman of Herman Brothers Lake and Land Management. They're a company that sort of facilitates out. They take care of your lakes and things like that, but also know a lot about ice fishing in this state. When I was talking to producer Ben Awakenight, I was talking about Wisconsin, but he found some people, an ice fishing business in Illinois. So we'll go downstate a little bit later. Frank Sennett will be here as well. But we start on Wednesdays with Terry Savage. You can read her columns at terrysavage.com and listen to her here in the Tribune on WGN-TV, just about everywhere. And she joins us on a phone line now. Terry, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Always love Wednesdays, and wow, look back at what a week it's been. The Dow is just a smidge under 20,600. About a week ago, we were going 20,000. And gold, which we talked about last week at $1,200 an ounce, was 1203 or 4 that day, is $1,232 an ounce.
I saw a column that said the Dow is flirting with 21,000. That's a little optimistic right now, isn't it?
It's 400 points away.
So that counts as flirting?
I mean, on a percentage basis, that's very small. Look, I sent out, and I know you received it, a newsletter to all my subscribers, my free subscribers at terrysavage.com, which I do only when I get in the mood. I haven't done that since before the election because I just wanted to stay away from politics. But what is going on now astounds me, and I think it was time to speak out. Everything is priced to perfection, and I don't think we get perfection. So I'm a little cautious.
Okay, now what I heard you saying was that the stocks are priced at best case scenario. Is that what you're saying? And chances are best case scenario is not going to happen.
Well, there's so much that's obviously, you know, first of all, what's pushing the market higher? Well, the whole idea was going to be economic growth. Why was there going to be economic growth? There were going to be tax cuts. We're not getting so much in the way of tax cuts. It hasn't even come up yet. And the question is, will those tax cuts be what they call revenue neutral? In other words, you cut taxes here, but you raise them there. That doesn't really help the economy very much. And we're going to have a bigger deficit anyway, because interest rates are going up, and that means interest on the national debt, a huge component of our annual our budget, will also be taking more money. So the issue of tax cuts stays in the background. Regulations, they're going to free everybody from regulations. They started freeing the people that prey on consumers. Get me started later on the fiduciary role. I don't want to deal with that. We're dealing with the realities of what's expected. We're going to have infrastructure growth. They haven't gotten around to build anything but talk of a wall. It doesn't seem to be happening, especially as we look at the budget deficit. That debt ceiling is coming up again in March 10th. So there's a whole lot of things that the market is counting on, and people are counting on. Gosh, sentiment is so bullish.
Terry.
Small business sentiment out today. CEO sentiment. All of these things are reaching new highs.
You're bringing me down from my sugar high.
Did you ever give when you had little kids, do you ever make a mistake of giving them chocolate ice cream or candy about 7 o'clock at night before bed?
Yeah, I know. It gets ugly.
You're
not telling me it's not going to get that ugly, is it?
I don't know how ugly it will get. This is one of the longest bull markets we've had and longest economic expansions, and I don't make a lot of money forecasting when tops will occur. We all know the market can stay irrational longer than we could stay solvent. So you don't want to bet against the market. But I think what people want to do is think about what the alternatives are. Bonds, we know the Fed's going to raise rates. We know Trump and Janet Yellen are going to get into a big fight because raising rates will make the dollar stronger, and that's not what the administration has signaled it wants. So we're going to have this interest rate thing. That's not why you don't want to be in bonds. The stock market, if you need to have some liquidity at the last minute, you don't want to be selling when everybody else is. So where do you put the extra money? And as I said right at the end of the show last week, we're seeing inflation. Today we saw the consumer price index make a five-year high. Producer prices also up the most month over month since 2012. So I think you're seeing signs of inflation. I think you still have an opportunity in gold stocks and gold mutual funds with some of the money that you take off the stock market table.
Talk to me for 30 seconds about border adjustment taxes. The president met today at the White House with retail leaders, leaders of several retail companies, and told them that they're going to love his tax reform. He says H&R Block isn't going to like it so much. But I know they went in there with the message of saying, hey, we don't like these border adjustments because it'll end up costing our customers.
Well, wait a minute. We all know that companies don't pay taxes. People do. And when companies and manufacturers and importers of everything from your tennis shoes to your tennis balls to your sheets and your towels and your electronics, when prices go up at the border because of a border tax, that gets passed on to consumers. Number one, that creates higher prices. Here we go with inflation again. Number two, it prices consumers out of the market. We've had a great run of living good lives. I know there's an argument on the other side of this, but the facts are the consumers have gotten more for their money because of cheap imports. If you put a border adjustment tax, it will hurt the ordinary consumer because, hey, how about avocados?
How about avocados?
Yeah. I mean, you got to short companies like Chipotle that use a lot of avocados. Seriously, those prices get passed on or consumers don't buy. That slows down the economy. That's not a good idea.
That's Terry Savage talking about the money that you might be losing from products coming over the border. Later, she's going to talk about products or money you might be losing from scammers on your computer coming up on the Business Lunch. It is 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for tuning in. Terry Savage is on a phone line as well. Terry, you know, while we were speaking, Governor Rauner was giving his budget address, and he seemed, according to the accounts of people who were there, to be a little bit more willing to move toward a compromise, talked about the fact that he could support higher taxes and a higher sales tax in exchange for some of the cuts, which isn't altogether new, but the tone of it seemed
that's
to be
a surprise. Yeah. I just saw that come through, as a matter of fact, and I think that's a bit of a surprise. It's about time Illinois comes to the table on some kind of a budget arrangement. That's a whole show. I'm really interested in that because we haven't seen any movement on the state budget issue in a long time. Let me tell you that while we were in commercial break, I grabbed a look because I heard all these ding, ding, dings on my email, and I see what's happened. All of you have signed up as new subscribers.
Nice.
It's free, by the way, and you can, you know, get yourself off the list at any time. But I send out these newsletters, and here's what I'm going to do for anybody who didn't get the one that went out Monday, which I really liked writing, and I would like for you to have. So Marlene and Barbara and Wally and Paul and Bonnie and Rick and Jane and Janice and Sonny and a bunch of you who signed up just now, all the rest of you who sign up today, tonight, I will take today's sign-ups and forward a copy of that newsletter that just went out Monday morning.
And other people want to sign up, they sign up at terrysavage.com,
right? Terrysavage.com. You have to, there's a little box that says sign up here, and then you get a confirming email and click to sign up. And then in return, you get a link to my personal financial organizer form, which you can print out or fill out on your computer.
And your site is certified phishing free, correct?
It is absolutely phishing free. That's what I'm going to warn you about in my latest column.
Identity fraud victims up 16% in 2016. That's to 15 million people. That surprises me that it has 16% to go up.
I thought, you know, and take a look at the numbers, an extra $1 billion to more than $16 billion in the last year. And we talked last year when the chip cards came in about how this was going to prevent credit card fraud. So I think I relaxed too, and everybody did. But even though it's a pain in the neck and they make a big ding when it says, don't remove your card, don't remove your card, you know. But what's growing is something called card not present fraud, because you know, the thieves out there, if they can't get those mag strip cards and make massive fraudulent purchases, they're resorting to new stuff. And
well, look, how are we using our cards? We're using our cards as much, I think, probably online as we are at the store.
And we, of course, we want to be sure that you're dealing with a retailer. I mean, I keep one credit card only for online shopping. But we want to make sure you're dealing with a good retailer. And so you're not going to get your card fraudulently used if you're on Amazon or some of the major retailers. The thing is, there are obvious misdirections, and there are bots that they send to you, phishing bots that look so real now,
right,
so absolutely real, that you could be tempted to click on them. When you do, you might think it went nowhere, but it enabled some stuff in your computer that can track your use of your credit card or your bank login credentials, and that opens the door literally.
Terry, a couple weeks ago, I don't remember if it was my computer or my printer or something, but I had a pop-up on my computer that said, maybe it was that I had a virus, that I had an issue, and it said, you know, click here to get it fixed or call us, right? And it looks real. I'm looking at it. So I actually called them, and there was a number on there. So I called them, and this woman answered, and I said, look, I think you're a fraud. She goes, no, this is what's going on. I said, no, I think you're a fraud. And I finally hung up on her, and she called me back by using my caller ID and continued to try to get my information.
Because the minute, yes, exactly. You absolutely only want to call directly to your bank, not to these numbers. Believe me, it has gotten, you know, in the old days, they used to misspell words and use bad grammar, and it was very minor league kind of stuff. You know, your account at Chase or your account at Discover or something like that. Please log in now. Click here to do it. Those were so obvious. It's not obvious anymore. And I'll tell you something that in doing the interview with Javelin that did this research survey, I've always felt that if you would do the common sense things, I did this morning, check your accounts regularly, your bank account, your credit card website. I like to see what's been reported there. Check your credit report three or four times a year at the different bureaus. Don't hide your passwords in a browser. Don't click and say save my password or save my identification. There's a whole lot of suggestions in this column. But one thing, LifeLock was a co-sponsor of this research. I don't want to jinx it, but I haven't done that. I thought I could be on top of things. They pointed out that the biggest open door now is not come through credit bureaus, because payday loans and these peer-to-peer lending platforms and all the people opening new cell phone accounts that don't get quickly reported to the credit bureaus, those are another way that your information could be compromised. So bottom line, identity theft hasn't gone away. Stay on top of it. Second bottom line, don't just get so happy that you hear the closing market numbers, and here we are, we're well over 20,000. Think about what if you're about to retire and you need to start withdrawing. Think about if you're going to have required minimum distributions in your account. And if you're younger, of course you're going to keep putting that money in your 401k. But think about where else you might put some to diversify a bit out of the general stock market.
That's Terry Savage. Terry, thanks very much for joining us today. You can read more at terrysavage.com. We'll talk again next week. All right, Kim Gordon, thanks very much. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN Wednesday afternoon. And Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business is here in the flesh, in the studio. Mr. Sennett, great to see you again.
Good to see you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so there's a number of stories I want to talk to you about that's been in Cranes recently. But one is this whole, I had no idea there was such a thing as a beer hunter. And these beer hunters are really kind of, well, I don't know what came first, the scarcity or the hunter. I mean, maybe it's this sort of fabricated thing that beer companies are helping to make money from.
Yeah, it's like Magic the Gathering cards for adults, I think. Peter Frost has this really interesting story in Cranes about what they call the whales of the craft beer industry, and all these guys, typically, although they're women too, but obsessive beer nerds who seek out through the internet and word of mouth these amazing limited edition beers. And, you know, we used to hear about Three Floyds Dark Lord Day down in Indiana.
There was one in Wisconsin too. I can't remember what it was, but they would come out with one.
And then they've got Goose Island, the Bourbon County Stout, and they're mocking it. These beer nerds are saying, you know, well, that's kind of like entry level, like Lego whale kind of thing. I mean, they're just like, that's for the posers. So they're really seeking out the brand new things. And so,
let me go to this, because a buddy of mine and I used to go out like once a week or so, and we often would go to a Ram nearby because it was a place.
Right. It's a chain of microbrewery, right?
It's a fine place, not a big deal.
Right.
But they're all of a
I've
sudden.
I've been to the one in Rosemont a few times.
But they're charging people $450 to go taste a beer?
Yeah. So the one in Schaumburg has a brewer who started there, I think, as a dishwasher. And when he turned 21, he worked his way into the brewing ranks, and he's come up with this micro brew whale, this very popular brew called Chaos. And last year it took 3 months to sell out the tickets for this special day. This year, it's, as you say, it's like, you know, $400 and you go and you get, you know, a few bottles of the thing. So you can basically go to your buddies
and say, no.
Well, I have to say, a few years ago, I spent pretty much my entire month of October finding 3 bottles of Pappy Van Winkle bourbon. So I'm not immune to this.
So,
but bourbon's so much better than beer, Steve.
You just betrayed your own sort of. But so for this Ram thing, 400 tickets sold out in a minute.
Yeah.
Okay, so how much of this is about the connoisseurship, if that's the word, of fine beers, or the economics of creating a demand to make money?
Yeah, I mean, it's synergistic, right? I mean, you've got this nerd mystique. These guys are willing to go around the country and pay the top dollar. And when you've got more microbreweries or more breweries in America than you've ever had before, this is kind of a niche that can be exploited. So you economically, you can make some good money if you can hit with these guys. And it's, you know, it's hit or miss. Who knows what's the next Chaos? You
know? I don't know. I'm going to be working on it in my bathtub when I get home tonight. The James Beard Award finalist or semifinalist came out today. And I know Chicago once again did pretty well, right?
Yeah, so Chicago is now hosting the Beard Awards, and it's a fun fact: the Academy Awards, you know, are now called the Beard Awards of Film by a lot of people. So I love the food, as you say. So last year, you know, they did quite well hosting. The city hosted, but Grant Achatz and Nick Kokonis, Alinea, won Outstanding Restaurant. Curtis Duffy of Grace won Outstanding Chef for the Great Lakes region. And once again this year, we are very well represented in the Chicago area. Oriole, Royster, and Smith are the best new restaurant nominees from Chicago. Greg Wade of Publican, Outstanding Baker, Outstanding Bar Program, Lost Lake, second year. Great bar if you like cool tiki drinks.
And who doesn't?
Yeah, exactly. And everybody's buddy, Tony Mantuano, Spiaggia, Outstanding Chef, Carrie Nahabedian of Naha, her third year, his second year. So, you know, Outstanding Restaurant, Topolo Bampo. So our, you know, friend Bayless is representing. Kevin Bame and Rob Katz of Boca Restaurant Group are Outstanding Restaurateur. There's just, you know, the list goes on and on. Chicago is just such a mainstay of the food scene.
Well,
now,
this is your thing, too. Like when I was growing up, the ladies would have their standing Saturday appointment for the hair.
Right.
And don't you have like a subscription to restaurant?
Next, yeah.
You have a subscription?
Which is the Alinea Group, yeah. And actually, I'm going tonight.
So
if you're there, wave and say hi.
What do you think the chances of me being there?
I don't know, Steve. I'll buy you a drink if you come by.
But we've got
Go to the office later on.
And in Cranes is their list of top places for, well, look, you and I both know the best place in Chicago for a business lunch.
Right.
Is right here.
Showcase Studio.
But if you want to eat at your business lunch.
There's some donuts in the break room.
I know. Maple covered.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cranes is out with a list of great business lunch spots, right? What stands out to you?
Yeah, so it's done by, you know, area of the city, because where you're working, you generally want to meet close to where your office is. And I actually happened to eat, shockingly, at one of these restaurants recently that is the star of the financial district, leads off the story, Steadfast. It's at 120 Westman Row, and it's in the Kimpton Gray Hotel. Amazing. It is like a West Randolph Street high-end restaurant in the middle of the financial district. You know, you don't quite see this quality of food in the main loop area that often.
Uh-huh.
Service is exceptional.
What's the price?
It's, you know, $30 entree kind of level.
Okay, right.
Really great, friendly service, though, too. It's not pretentious. I just stumbled on it. A friend of mine took me there, and I was like, this is amazing.
Well, I ask about the price because, you know, joking aside, you are a connoisseur. You recognize a fine restaurant. I'm not. I'm just not.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, you know, if you can go into that restaurant and have a completely different experience than me. I go in because I'm hungry. I find, you know, the breadsticks. I eat and I'm fine. And you are recognizing, because you are so much more into it, you are seeing so much more.
Maybe. I mean, after I get off this segment, I'm meeting Rex Hupke downstairs at the Billy Goat for a burger. So,
right.
You know, I'm the same as you, you know, plus I like the high-end stuff.
Yeah, and it's not a criticism.
No.
I mean, I just think it's like...
And I would say the lunches at these places, the price point's a lot lower. It's like $14, $15. And if you're like that,
right,
you know, like where you're not sure if you like the high-end stuff, I would try the lunches.
I mean, you know, there are people who go to a baseball game and they see a game and then there are other people who see kind of a ballet.
Right.
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 And that's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I don't think I'm that much of a...
It wasn't an accusation.
No, I just don't know if I'm that smart. But Ocean
Let's
Cut
talk about
in
Hubkey
this neighborhood,
now,
you know, is also on the list. There's some good places, Cold Storage on Fulton, Tanta on Grand. So any neighborhood you're in, check that package out. It's you know, if you're a late luncher, your mouth's going to be watering.
Even a joint up on the Northwest Highway. Frank Sennett, thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Steve.
It's 12:52. This is the Business Lunch, the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm Steve Bertrand. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about the winter weather and the fact that we might get up to 60 degrees in Chicago a little bit later this week. Whatever happened to snow and ice got me to thinking about people who depend on that snow and ice for a living. And last year, I went up to Wisconsin and talked to some ice fishermen up there and thought we'd try that in Illinois today. Nate Herman is with us of Herman Brothers Lake and Land Management. Nate, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Well, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Are you out on the ice right now, Nate? I hope not, because there's not much of it.
Well, actually, where I'm at, I'm watching the geese swim right now where I should be ice fishing. So we've got zero ice.
Are you downstate a little bit, down in Peoria?
Yep, we're just 35 miles southwest of Peoria, and we had our shortest ice fishing year to date.
How long has it been?
Say that again?
How long was it?
Well, we got out for a grand total of 3 days this year.
No kidding, only 3 days. Well, how much of it, you know, when I think of Wisconsin, I think of guys who are actually, they have guides out there who will take them out on the lakes and show them the spots. Is it that sophisticated is the wrong word, but is it that involved in Illinois, or is it not that big of a deal here?
Well, there's a huge demand. I mean, a lot of people love to ice fish, but the last 2 years specifically, the sporting goods stores and, you know, everybody selling the ice fishing gear, they've took a big hit. You know, they're getting in inventory ahead of the season, and 2 years straight, we haven't had a season. So it's been tough. It's been tough. But then you go back to the winter of 2013 and, you know, we had over 60 days out on the ice.
Yeah, I would imagine a long season doesn't help as much as a short season hurts.
Correct. You are correct. We had 3 days of safe ice, and so, you know, everybody knew it could be a potentially short season. So, you know, we were able to take over 20 guys a day, you know, for three straight days.
You took 20 guys out a day for 3 days.
Yep.
It's got to be hard. Yeah. How do you figure? I mean, I know you drill through the ice to see the depth of the ice to see whether or not it's safe, but it's got to be hard if it's your business to say, well, it's close, but I just can't take you out because we're not. I mean, I know you don't want to lose fishermen, but, you know, I mean, there must be pressure to keep that season going for as long as you can.
Well, that's where we have to adapt. So, you know, for us, you know, we got to go out and make money every day. You know, I mean, the bills are there whether we're out ice fishing or not.
Right.
So we just try to get creative, you know, and kind of have contingency plans with just various construction jobs and, you know, that sort of thing to fill in. But by all means, you know, if we're going to work outside during the winter, you know, there's nothing better than ice fishing, you know, as opposed to tearing a roof off.
How long you been doing this ice fishing thing?
We've been doing guided ice fishing. So our story is a little unique. We started guiding ice fishing for clients on their own lakes.
Really?
So we help people set up lakes and properties for having fun. And we could grow really big fish for them. But if they don't know how to catch them, what good is it to have the big fish in the lake? So we started entertaining clients and their guests by doing guided ice fishing on their own lakes. And then over the years, we've been able to pick up our own lakes of our own. So we have over 55 different lakes and ponds now of our own that now we can take, you know, the general public guided ice fishing.
That's the bigger part of it, right? When we say Herman Brothers Lake and Land Management, you actually create lakes and ponds for people on their property.
We do. All over the state of Illinois and all over the Midwest, we travel around helping people set up you know, their ideal recreational property. What? And that's a lot of fun.
When is the busy time for you then? I would imagine it's summer when you're digging holes, but you must be planning all winter long too.
Yeah. So if we're not working construction, if it's too cold out, you know, we're working in the office, you know, the office stuff. But, you know, our season really is going to kick off here about the first week of March. And it's kind of confusing people. This 60 degree weather right now is getting everybody confused, thinking it's spring.
Right.
But it's not quite time to, you know, get the lawnmowers out quite yet. We still got a little bit of winter yet, but people are getting excited. They're getting antsy, and the phone definitely is starting to ring.
Nate Herman from Herman Brothers Lake and Land Management. Hey, let's talk again when you're digging a lake somewhere.
Hey, that'd be awesome.
You bet.